Hello and welcome to the first episode of our tech podcast, and we have no idea what we're going to call this, but this is me, Dhruv Bhutani from Android Authority, Akshay Bhalla from Men's XP, and Harish from Android Central, and we're going to be talking about tech, the week in tech, general nerd shit, and just, you know, rant about stuff. So here it goes.
I mean,
I like how you didn't say my last name.
His name is Jonala Gadda. Is that right?
It's okay now.
Hey, it's too complicated.
Anyway, I think we should tell people why we're doing this. It's because the three of us, I think every day, talk about technology on WhatsApp or whenever we are together. And we've had some really funny conversations. And we thought, why not do a podcast? I think it's taken a year for us to do this, but...
Because we're lazy.
Because we're lazy. Yeah. And we're also, like, busy with our work, you know. We have jobs to do. So, yeah, I mean, let's get started with the episode.
So, basically, the idea here is that...
The Untitled Tech Podcast.
Yes, the Untitled Tech Podcast. I mean, actually, that's a pretty good name for it.
Yeah,
if you think about it.
That's a good name.
But yeah, just to build on why we're doing this, I think the idea was that there should be a no holds barred podcast, or, you know, some sort of content out there where we're not really bound by our publications or bound by any, you know, NDAs or whatever might be going on. We just want to voice our opinion on tech. And since we, all of us combined, have multiple decades of tech experience by now, and we've pretty much used everything that's out there, that gives us a unique perspective, so to speak, and give you our thoughts on it. So Harish, why don't you start off?
That was very mature. I would have made some jokes. Okay, let's start off with the Galaxy S20, because that's what defined this entire week. Let's start off with talking about how much it costs in India, because Samsung just announced that today. So what are our thoughts on S20 India pricing? The Galaxy S20 costs $66,999, the S20 Plus is $73,999, and the Ultra is $92,999. What do we think?
I mean, when you compare it to other flagships, I think it's a decent price. I mean, you compare the US price or even the European price, I think it's a great deal. But I feel it's going to be a little hard for Samsung to convince users to switch, especially since just 2 weeks before they launched S10 Lite and Note 10 Lite.
Yeah, you know, that's really my thought about it as well. Like, it's not a bad price at all, but realistically speaking, who really needs to spend a lakh rupees on a phone anymore? I mean, the S10 Lite and the Note 10 Lite, they're more than enough for, you know, practically everyone. And I mean, if you really want the best camera out there, I still wouldn't recommend a Samsung. It would either be an iPhone or a Pixel for me. Maybe even some of Huawei stuff, but certainly not a Samsung. It's got a lot going for it from a hardware perspective, but the software processing's always been a bit soft. Not quite the best, not the most natural around. So I don't know, like, who is this phone really for?
Well, it's for Samsung and a lot of the customers in the US, because for them the option is either Samsung or Apple at this point.
Sure, but we're not bound by contracts here, right?
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I agree with what you guys have just said. The S10 Lite is more than enough for anybody looking for a high-end Samsung phone in India. And it's great that Samsung actually launched this thing with the Snapdragon 855, not the 865, thankfully. I like that, and I've been using it for 2 weeks, and I don't see how anybody would pay $66,000 for the S20 when this thing exists.
I mean, the S20, probably for people who are on S9 or an S8 and are loyal Samsung users, and they probably only buy the S series. I think for them, this might be a great deal, especially when it starts around like $69,000. I think that's a great deal. A lot of people don't want a big phone. You know, S20 is decently sized, still bigger than the S10e, but a lot of people just, they skip years and buy a Samsung phone. Same with iPhone. So I think that's what the S20 series for me is like if I was a consumer, I would, and I'm on the S8, I would buy the S20. But since we review phones every week, we may feel a little fatigued because you're like, okay, they just launched the Note 10 Lite and the S10 Lite, and who is this for? But we also need to remember those people who don't buy phones as often or get to look at phones as often as we do.
You know, actually, on that front, like, I think Samsung's really got a missed opportunity here. They could very well have called this the S20 Lite or something like that. Because if you look at the back of the phone, it's got more in common with the S20 series than the S10 series of phones. And I mean, really, this could have been an S20 Lite, and you know, could very well have been positioned as the entry into the flagship S series, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, maybe the S20, but the Ultra is a lot of money for not that much gain over what you're really getting over the other models.
Are you saying the S20 Lite, not the Note 10 Lite, is a bit late? It should have come a lot earlier, because I mean, if the S20 Lite came, let's say, in October or September, then it would have made more sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it would have launched right around the next generation, I mean, the OnePlus 7T series. And honestly, I think it is a fantastic competitor to the OnePlus 7T. For people, you know, who are more comfortable with going to a store and buying it, who just want to stay within the Samsung ecosystem.
Harish, what do you
think? I don't understand the branding at all either on this, because everybody will be confused thinking that the S10 Lite is a generation old, but it's not, it's brand new. And they'll look at the S20 because both of these phones launched like a month apart from each other, right? So Samsung basically created confusion when there wasn't any need for one. And now the S10 series, the standard S10 series is on sale. Mm-hmm. So that'll also cannibalize sales of the S10 Lite. I don't know.
What do you think about the design, though? I mean, we've seen this with the Pixel 4 and the iPhone. I mean, the only way companies can differentiate themselves is from the back of the phone. The front mostly looks the same. If you put the S20 and or the Note 10 in front of each other, they look identical. But what do you think of the design at the back?
Iterative, but what more can Samsung do? I really like the design of the Note 10 Plus because that gradient thing made the phone stand out a little bit. But other than that, Samsung has been iterating on the same design for what, close to 3 years now. The design is great. I don't mind the fact that the S10 Lite has a plastic design at all. If anything, it makes the phone that much more durable. But it's not the most enticing phone to look at. I mean, look at all those cameras at the back. It's just a phone that you would put a case on and then just use day to day. That's it.
But isn't that the thing? You know, everybody's already putting a case on their phone. So that's a very smart place to cut corners on.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter what material is used at the back. And if it translates into savings for customers, it's a win for Samsung.
I really wish Samsung would move away from that. I mean, I know you like it, but the Note 10's back, it's just really chintzy, and I really don't like that flashy unicorn gradient that they've got going on. I don't know how you tolerate it.
I mean, that's why they offer the black color, right? For people who don't like that flashy color to the phone, or the gradient design that refracts light. But yeah, I mean, even I'm not a big fan of flashy designs, and that's the problem I had with the Poco X2 as well, which we'll talk in a bit. But yeah, I mean, this year I think companies should experiment a bit more with their designs, with the colors and you know, everything else.
Yeah,
Dhruv, if he left design choices to you, man, every phone would be just a gray slab designed in the Soviet Union.
You know, I would love that too.
I don't mind that at all. In fact, I love Nokia's designs. Didn't they win like 6 awards recently?
Yeah, yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a shame that the rest of the package is never really up there. But
yeah.
I mean, at least they've got the design solid. I mean, really nailed down.
Shame about the rest, though. Yeah, we should talk about Nokia at a later point and see where they've come.
Definitely, when they do something this year.
Yeah, when they do something.
Speaking of the square camera module, what do you think of the camera hardware though?
Very interesting. I'm particularly interested in looking at what Samsung has done on the S20 Ultra because of the three, that's probably the only phone I'd be interested in trying out. Not necessarily the phone that gets a lot of sales because anybody who would be interested in shelling out that kind of money would look at the Galaxy Z Flip. So, don't know. I don't know it. I don't think it makes a lot of sense from a business point of view, but from a hardware point of view, it is very interesting. That 100x zoom looked particularly awesome in the demo, but we'll have to get our hands on it to see how it works in real life.
Hey, while we're on the topic of cameras, why the fuck is everybody integrating these stupid 2 megapixel macro cameras over telephoto lenses? Like, who is
So I
asking
was
for
talking
this?
to the POCO guys about that because I don't understand it. I think I've used like 8 phones with them and I think I got one usable shot out of those 8 phones. So I was asking them and they said customers actually asked for this macro module. It seems everybody is interested in standing next to flowers and zooming in and taking shots of these things.
I tried to do that, and for the life of me, I can never get it to focus on the subject. I always feel I'm quite far away, even if I get close to the subject, I feel like an idiot in front of all the people around me. It just feels
I think
super
it's one
awkward.
of those things that come with age, like how you can't hear particular frequencies if you're old. I think you can only use a macro shooter if you're 18 or younger.
Yeah, I
Something to do
mean,
with that.
it's the same stereotypical image, right? Like zoomed into a camera, into a flower, and you've got the pollen grains shining through, and it's been done and dusted. And why does everybody want to replicate that same shot? It's
I don't know, man. I hate pollen. It looks disgusting.
Well,
Indeed.
you need to step out more to like it, no, Harish?
But actually, the
I'm
S10
good,
Lite's
man.
macro camera isn't terrible. Like, if you find the need to use it, it's actually much more usable than anything else that I've come across so far.
Yeah, I mean the module on the S10 Lite is fine. It's okay. It's better than anything else we've seen, definitely. But I don't understand why there is a need for one. It's not like that's taking up room for one extra sensor when there is a need for one.
Yeah.
What about the video capabilities? I mean, I think this is the first phone that can do 8K recording.
The S20 Ultra?
I think it's all three of
Yeah,
them.
all three of them. Yeah, it can do 8K at 24 frames per second.
I kind of like how they focus more on video this time because usually people, I mean, I also use an iPhone and there's a stark difference in the video quality recording, whether it's at 60 frames or even the audio quality of the video. And I feel this time Samsung may make a difference in that part of the camera.
Akshay with the iPhone Flex, eh? All right, shooting videos with the iPhones. Yeah, I get it. I mean, see, we'll have to again figure out how Samsung has managed the software processing of it. It can have 8K on it, but if Samsung hasn't actually put in the work, videos will still look like garbage on the phone.
Yeah, we have
And
no
there's
idea
also the
about
fact
the.
to consider that it's what, 600 MB for every minute of video.
That's actually not too bad. I mean, high quality, high bit rate, 4K content can also clock in at what, 450, 500 megs for a minute. Actually, that worries me a bit that the bit rate might not be too high on the 8K content. And that's going to have a bigger effect on audio quality over the, sorry, the video quality over sheer resolution because who can realistically see an 8K video right now anyway?
Yeah, I mean, unless you have Samsung's The Wall, which costs crores of rupees, how will you see an 8K video? I mean, on what display?
I'm sure we'll see 4K versus 8K videos soon, and folks will be saying, "Oh, I can see the difference. Oh my God, so many more pixels. Wow."
I mean, the S20 series can directly upload an 8K video to YouTube. The problem is that nobody that watches videos on YouTube has an 8K display. So how will they,
Or a connection capable of streaming 8K regularly.
yeah, that too.
That too, yeah.
I mean, it's a pain to stream 1080p in India, forget 4K. So 8K is a little out of the question, don't you think?
I mean, YouTube's target audience in India is some dude on a Redmi Note streaming on his Jio signal, right?
I think that's every yeah, that's yeah, probably it.
That's basically it. So, yeah. 8K is not going to be a thing in India, at least, or anywhere else for that matter. I mean, look at where 4K content is now.
And certainly not for the next 5 years at least. I mean, even with Japan coming into 8K broadcast with the Olympics, nobody's really capable of watching that. There are no screens out there. But just to before we wrap this up, what do you think about Samsung touting that you can take a 32 megapixel snapshot? I mean, it's shooting at 24 frames per second, so there's going to be inevitably there's going to be motion blur in anything. That you take any sample that you take out of that video, and don't you think it's just like it's a bit of a waste? And Samsung's just talking out of their ass when they continuously market that aspect of it.
Well, they've always needed something to market their phones, and for this generation, it is that. Where now, in the past, most of the features that they highlighted as marquee additions have never worked. So it does feel like vaporware. But again, let's see if they've actually managed to do some work and make it usable.
Cool. All right. I think it's time to move on to our next topic, and that's coronavirus, its implications on MWC and the entire tech industry. That sounds like the headline for one of my articles, but never mind. Let's move on ahead from that. MWC is cancelled, and I think that's the first MWC that's ever been cancelled in its 30 odd year history.
33 years.
33 years. That's quite
Yeah.
crazy. And also, they did not get the insurance refund that they were hoping for, which kind of sucks. There's been a lot of speculation that MWC might not be able to recover from this. There might not be an MWC next year, or that it might just happen. You never know.
Well, wasn't this the case for a few years now because of Barcelona's general unrest and the protests that they have? Because the 2 times I went there was always some kind of protest going on during MWC.
True, but I think the bigger aspect is that GSMA could have just moved the conference to another city. They had a contract. They have a contract with Barcelona till 2022, I think. But I mean, if the protests get too much, they can just move it around. But right now, with them canceling the conference, it just puts the entire the authority of the conference at jeopardy because. I mean, let's be honest, if every company which has pulled out holds its own conference and gets the same kind of media attention, realistically, they never really needed MWC then, is it?
I
Yeah, I think
mean,
Samsung realized this, what, 2 years ago when it decided to do its own thing, and it's working out fine for them.
of course, the epidemic is extremely, it's an extremely sad news for China and everyone that's affected. I feel bad for the people, but it has its implications. I mean, that's for specifically for MWC, that's millions of dollars down the drain, and ultimately, I think every company has a choice. Do we forego millions of dollars, or do we risk the safety of our employees and everyone else who will attend and probably spread the virus in case they catch it? So I think, it has more social implications as well, apart from just being a tech show, because it can literally, I mean, it's already killed more than 1,000 people, so it's a huge health risk as well. No matter what precautions you take, something can always go wrong.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah,
without a
from what
doubt,
I. Sorry, go ahead, though.
no, without a doubt, canceling the conference was absolutely the right idea, but it's a lot of sunk cost for smaller companies. Somebody like even a Nokia can recover the six-figure cost that they must have paid for getting their space at the conference hall. But there's umpteen smaller companies which who are there for business, they're there to connect with operators, and this is a cost that a lot of startups cannot stomach if they cannot get business out of this.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We all see MWC as like a gadget show where we get to play with the latest phones and devices. But for a lot of exhibitors that come to the show, it's probably the only way for them to access a global supplier base and make deals, because that's the largest show in the industry, right? And without that, I don't know how it will go. I mean, I don't understand where MWC will go from here. A few brands I talked to said that there's a possibility that a few years down the line it'll be moved to Dubai. that'll be an interesting venue because as a hub, it works better for logistics. But for Barcelona, it doesn't look good.
I mean, apart from MWC, if there are other implications, we've already been hearing from companies because of coronavirus, workers can't reach their factories, and because of that, everything is getting delayed. There's reports of the iPhone getting delayed, the Switch is already facing supply issues, PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, and a couple of other devices. I'm pretty sure everything that comes out of China is delayed, and that's a lot of money lost, or we can see a hike in prices for all these gadgets as well. So I think coronavirus may have a long-term effect that we currently aren't even thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, I just came back from Nehru Place, which for our listeners is the biggest electronic shopping market in New Delhi or probably most of India. And I had an interesting chat with one of the dealers over there. And, you know, he says that even though we've got a stockpile of equipment for a month or so, there are no shipments coming out of China. Whatever shipments have already reached here are undergoing extra scrutiny from the government, from the customs department. For any potential health hazard, and prices are already up, like across segments. You know, there's a price hike of $20 to $30 just because of fear that shipments might be stalled for months on end. So we're already seeing the repercussions of this. It's not just MWC; it's equipment. In fact, Redmi raised its price for one of its phones. The which was it? The Note 8, I
I
think.
think so.
Yeah, the base model of the Note 8, that's already gone up by about 500 to 600 rupees. Potentially, there might be a high price hike for other devices as well, because end of the day, like for all our shouting about Make in India, we're still just assembling in India. All the components are still coming from China, and without the components, you cannot make a phone.
You know when
Well.
something's wrong when Xiaomi has to increase their prices. You know something is seriously wrong.
But that's the thing. If coronavirus is showing us one thing, it's how reliant everything is on China, basically. It's not just the tech industry. Everything will be delayed. This thing will have long-term impact on not just the tech industry, but other consumer segments as well, right? Because it's not just phones that are getting delayed, it's also the software that's getting delayed. If you look at the 70, the security patch has been delayed because nobody was able to go to the OnePlus office for the last few weeks. So this will have long-term effects because if folks are not able to go to their offices, they're not able to work on future products. So we'll likely see delays around what's meant to come down the line 6 months or even a year. So it is a scary situation, and I mean, this is unprecedented, right? Something affecting China to this extent. So we'll have to wait and see how this plays out, but it doesn't look, I mean, it's a scary situation to be in right now, and
Yeah,
things
well,
could
I
only
don't
get
know.
worse over the
I'm
coming
gonna put
months.
on my tinfoil hat, but it really puts China in perspective in the global political and financial scenario, you know. Like World War III will not be fought with weapons. China can literally just block off access, block off trade to every country in the world. And that's it, they won. Like it is the world's factory, but the world is dependent on it, and to a massive
Yeah,
degree.
that's it. Well, it'll be a short war.
I think everyone's gonna give up in maybe 2 days and like, here, take your money, please get back to work because we can't afford anything that's coming, that's available right now. So I mean, yeah,
Please give us our please give us our iPhones
I mean, you know, we're talking about iPhones and smartphones in general, but they have another community to deal with. That's the gaming community. And if the PlayStation 5 or the Xbox Series X gets delayed or gets more expensive because of the coronavirus, oh God, I don't even know what kind of uproar I'm going to see online.
Can you imagine a civil revolt in America, with everybody going against the government, asking them to ease up sanctions on China because they can't get their iPads and their
I mean,
PlayStations?
that's quite realistic, man. I mean, I can see that happen, and I mean,
I mean,
Trump.
we're in deep conspiracy theory zone right now, but that's an interesting plot for a movie.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean,
when.
that will absolutely be the case. Apple already has a lot of pull with the government in the fact that it was able to get I mean, favorable trade terms when the rest of the industry, well, the industry has suffered there because of the trade ban. So I don't know. Can definitely see that playing out.
Yeah, okay, cool. Let's move on to our next topic. We're already 25 minutes in, and now we're on to the Poco X2. The Redmi K30 or the Poco X2, call it whatever you want. It's practically the same phone. There's no NFC on the India model. And I don't know, the response has been a bit lukewarm. There is some excitement for it, but yeah, I mean, it's nowhere close to what Xiaomi achieved with the Poco F1. Maybe it's the specs, maybe it's the price point, maybe it's the fact that there's just too much competition out there already. What do you guys think?
Yeah,
I mean,
what a
we could just go
phone.
by
When Poco
the.
said they were coming out with a new phone, I was so excited because the F1 still sells decent amount. But the X2 was not the phone that we deserved, man. I was thinking that they'd continue the heritage of the F1, but they could have gone any other route than a rebrand.
I mean, we can just look at the headlines of our reviews, all three of ours, and I think that paints a great picture. I think Harish has said that if you can look beyond its Redmi 30, K30 origins, I said that it lacked an identity, and yours was something
Yeah,
same,
that's a
right?
perfectly average mid-range phone. It's a fine phone. There's nothing wrong with it, but really, what separates it from anything else on the market?
Nothing.
I mean, the Realme X2 launched a month or 2 months before, and the X2 Pro launched, and I think people were expecting a successor to the F1 with flagship specs, with a mid-range pricing, and instead they got something of a rebranded phone, and people were probably turned off by it. I'm not sure. I
I
can't
think
really
what really
say.
pisses off people is that, you know, they can they it's understandable to have a mid-range phone to flesh out the portfolio, but really after like an year and a half and all the teasing around,
18
like
months.
yeah, you come up with
Yeah.
a rebranded phone, that's it. Like, come on.
That's the letdown for me. It's not the fact that it's a rebrand or anything. It's the fact that they've been dormant for essentially 18 months, and then they're like, oh, hey, look, we're a sub-brand now. We do our own thing. We're gonna come up with something totally incredible. And then it's the X2. The phone itself is absolutely fine. For $16,000, this is an incredible phone. You get a lot of great hardware, and the camera is pretty decent. And that display, when it works, the high refresh rate is always great. But I mean, there's nothing exciting about it. There's nothing to differentiate it from anything else that's out there. And that was what Poco was all about. And when the F1 launched, nobody else talked about any other phone for the rest of 2018 because the
And
F1 was
2019.
such a great product.
Yeah,
And with the
everyone.
X2, it's just also another phone that you can buy. That's it.
I mean, when you mentioned the 120 Hz refresh rate, I think the three of us, when we opened the phone and got done with our setup, the first thing we talked about was that this thing does not feel like a phone that has a display with a refresh rate of 120 Hz. I mean, we could easily compare it with the 70 or the 70 Pro, and you could see the huge difference.
That's the thing, like when it works, it's nice, but one, it doesn't consistently work, and just those judders and you know lag in the UI, it really gets to you. It's not the smooth, you know, comprehensive experience that you want or expect from a phone like this. I mean, at least that's literally what the company is selling and hasn't delivered.
I mean,
Yeah, and that's the problem these days, right? Hardware is commoditized. I mean, it doesn't cost brands a lot to put the latest hardware on a phone. But the problem is that the software is still a huge problem for most of these Chinese brands. So 90 Hz display is there on so many phones that we saw last year. But when you look at 120 on this thing, MIUI is just not optimized. It's like as if they decided to put the hardware in there, but make no changes on the software front to optimize the animations. And that shows up immediately.
I don't know, Harish, if you remember when we were in Taiwan together, and we went for the OnePlus kind of an open year session with Carl Pei right there. And if you remember, I asked them a question that, like, why did you rush your phone? It felt like a minimal viable product, and you'll fix it later. It's kind of a annoying thing that companies have, and that's what I felt with the Poco X2 as well. Like, it felt like a rushed launch. It felt like the software was just literally flashed in the last moment and they just launched the phone, and it's probably the same attitude that, as OnePlus, that we'll fix it later. The only difference is OnePlus actually fixes it later.
Yeah, it made a lot of great changes with OxygenOS. That's still the best Android skin that you can get today. And it feels better. Like, use the X2 and the 7T side by side, and it's clear. You can clearly make out that the animation and everything on the 7T is faster. So it's more to do with differentiating on the software front as we go forward, rather than just putting the latest and greatest features and not just making full use of them.
Yeah, that's the thing that I really like about OnePlus phones. Usually out of the box, or if not, you know, like within the first few weeks, the experience, the usage experience is rock solid. And that's really what you want from a phone. You know, when you're spending 35,000 or 50,000, depending on the model, you can live with, you know, you understand that this is still a value flagship. So you're okay with, you know, slightly not so great image quality or whatever. But at least the usage experience needs to be perfect. And I think OnePlus has really nailed that. Nothing else really comes close to this, except for the Pixel experience, but that has its own share of problems, of course.
I think we've segmented into our next topic of discussion, which is actually OxygenOS. And I mean, yeah, I think it's, I agree with Harish, it is one of the best skins out there. In fact, I did a story last week that is probably the best Android experience in 2020. And I sort of ended my story saying that a great software experience can make or break a phone. And I think clearly OxygenOS 10 has made OnePlus 70, 70 Pro, or 7 and 7 Pro as well a great device to own today.
Damn, I thought we were going to spend the last 30 minutes talking about the Pixel 4, but fine, I can talk about OxygenOS.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that
soon enough.
Okay, yes, OxygenOS. They did a lot of great things, and most of those things were suggested by the community. So I like the fact that they still continue to solicit feedback from the community. That open ears thing is really great, and their closed beta is particularly interesting because the community engagement that I see with OnePlus, I don't see with any other brand. This is where Xiaomi was, I think, back in 2014-15, when they used to have weekly feature rollouts based on what was suggested by the community. So a lot of what makes OxygenOS great is the fact that a lot of these features were suggested by users that really felt like there was something missing in the OS. And it has worked really well for them, because if you look at how polished OxygenOS has become over the last, 18 months, there's a clear-cut differentiation between it and every other skin on Android today.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, while we're talking about OxygenOS, where do you see it going with the next generation of phones? I mean, the OnePlus 8 is likely around the corner, should be coming out sometime in March or April. I mean, things are being delayed because of the coronavirus. We're not really sure about that. There have been some leaks out there that it'll switch out the pop-up camera for a cutout camera. Personally, I'm not too sure about that. But where do you see them taking the software?
I mean, we can
services.
See
that's where
software.
They'll take it.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking about this earlier this week. So they rolled out their own cloud sharing service, right? The cloud photo service where you get 50 GB free or whatever for the first year. I absolutely see them building on that this year with their own set of services, because that's a decent revenue model to have, right? Because they already have an engaged community and their user base is pretty loyal as it gets on Android. So for them to offer more differentiation would be to move into these services,
but
launch their own take on photo sharing or...
Yeah, but Harish, don't you think that takes away from the ethos of OxygenOS? Like, it was supposed to be a near stock build, you know, like with bare minimum of additions, and now it's taking the Xiaomi approach.
You can't really sustain a company with two phones a year. You need multiple products. I mean, it may sell well, but you still have overheads and you still have BBK on top of your head. So I think maybe that's why they have multiple phones for multiple categories, which appeals to different kinds of users. And coming back to where OxygenOS can go, in my opinion, we've already seen a hint of their ecosystem growing. Like, they've already launched a TV, and I feel They might just expand to other areas like IoT devices, wearables, new TVs, I don't know, and might integrate all that together. It really didn't come together well in 2019, but we can see it being fleshed out this year and maybe be more comprehensive like iOS and Android in general.
Yeah, I'm going to backtrack a
See,
bit
there are two parts.
on your
No, there are
point.
two parts to that. OxygenOS being stuck and all that. They've already
Definitely.
nailed that experience. It's not like they can make it any more stuck. By adding services without adding over customization, I think they're trying to strike that balance where they're trying to create new features and services. Like that Zen mode was very useful, right? When we launched, we were like, do I really need something like this? But it looks like they found a lot of usage for it. So I think they're trying to figure out what features to add, and they're doing this really nice thing where they're testing out features first, because stuff like work-life balance and all that debuted in India, but now it was so well received that they're trying to roll it out to other markets, things like that. I think they'll still maintain that ethos where they're like, okay, we're not going to move away from the fact that our skin will be close to pure Android, but they're trying to layer on features to see what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, I think I mean striking a good balance is going to be key. Nobody really wants a repeat of well what Xiaomi's been doing, interstitial ads and having their own branding everywhere. Whatever you pop up, open the videos app, and you've got the Xiaomi video gallery going on.
That's not a great
I'm not
experience.
entirely a big fan of how, when I pop into the settings menu, I get all this OnePlus Cloud is right there at the top. Maybe there should be an option to hide that, maybe push that down further into the menu, something like that. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, they're making good additions, but finding a right balance of it and portraying it in a meaningful way, that's going to be key to their future software strategy.
Although they've
Yeah.
been ignoring one part, though, I mean, we all three might agree to that, and we've been complaining about it for a while. It's the camera department, the camera software. It just still hasn't come to that flagship level for the kind of price they're charging. It's still not as good.
Actually, I think like I've got an interesting thought on that. It's just that they've really nailed the rest of the experience
Yeah,
so much
we expect a lot.
that our expectations are through the roof for this. Like any other phone at this price point, we'd be like, yeah, it's all right. But this is just like possibly the only one area where it falls short of what do you even call it anymore? A true flagship? A high-end flagship?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, but you can still, it's not that the hardware is not capable. You can easily install a Google camera APK and start shooting, and you can see the difference on the software level. And that's what I want from OnePlus this year. Great cameras and great software experiences with the camera that can enhance the experience, just like how the Pixel does. Maybe not on the same level, but closer. Even I like what even Realme is doing with their camera. So something similar like
Yeah,
that.
they've been doing a good job, but I fully agree with you guys on this. I don't think there's any other company that comes under as much scrutiny as OnePlus does when it comes to its phones. And that's just because of the community they've built up. Their users are very engaged, very active. They're very vocal about what they want in a phone and what they don't. So for them, I think that's what is the deal with OnePlus here. And that's why we get to hear so many things about the camera. Because if it were just any other phone, if it were a Xiaomi, for instance, we would all just say, yeah, this is a great camera and move on. But imagine if they actually figure out how to roll out a decent camera on
It'll
a
be a
phone of this
complete phone, in my
caliber.
opinion. It'll be a complete flagship phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, like now that we're on this topic, I'm going to backtrack a bit. Do you think with the Poco F1, Xiaomi really put themselves in a corner? They gave too much for too little money and they can't replicate that experience anymore?
Absolutely. Because that was, when I was talking to the Poco guys, that was basically what they alluded to, because they had a price point to meet and they couldn't go over it. Because if you see what went on with the K20 stuff, folks were really not taken with how much the phones cost, and I think they didn't want to go through that again. And I think they went the backwards way where they had a figure in mind and then they built like a spec sheet of what the phone should be. instead of the other way around.
And they will just check their inventories, and I think the Redmi K30 was the best option.
Okay, so we've had, well, MWC is canceled, but there's still a lot of phones that have released this month. One of the key areas that everybody's talking about is 5G. And there's a lot of interesting stuff going on over there, not in India, but across the world for sure. There's the entire conversation where, the S20, for example, doesn't support millimeter wave, and then you've got the sub-6 supporting phones, and there's this hardware that's coming out which doesn't work across all carriers. There's this new hardware coming out, top-end hardware like the Galaxy Z Flip, for example, which doesn't support 5G at all. Do you think this is going to be yet another transition year for 5G, and how is this going to really play out? What are your thoughts on this, guys?
Yep, this will be a transition year. Well, I don't know if last year was even counted, because other than a few 5G exclusive variants, it was all 4G, right? But with Qualcomm going all in on 5G, yeah, this will absolutely be the year where true flagships, as it were, will all have 5G. And the S20, the regular variant, doesn't have millimeter wave, but the S20 Plus and the Ultra do have both sub-6 and millimeter wave. So we should see how that actually makes it a better phone, because even in the US, 5G connectivity is very limited, right? It's limited to a few dozen cities, and in those cities, it's limited to a few areas. It's not ideal right now. But it's also interesting that Samsung doesn't offer any of that in India. The S20 series in India is all just 4G, and that's one of the reasons why they were able to price it so low.
I mean, last year I actually got a chance to go to Samsung's HQ in Korea, and I experienced 5G in hand. And I mean, I thought last year would be the transitional period, but no, clearly not. I think this year will be the transitional period for India. But what's interesting is that India will most probably go the sub 6 gigahertz route, because there's too many people, and millimeter waves is just not viable. And I saw that in action in Korea, and I was, still quite impressed. In the middle of the city, I think it was a Note 10, if I'm not mistaken, or an S10 5G, one of the two phones, I forget which one it was. I mean, Jio, the network, in the biggest network in India for data, they all use Samsung towers. And then for 5G, I think we're going to see the same thing in India. It's going to be predominantly Samsung towers with sub-6 frequencies.
But
So.
wait, first of all, Akshay with the Samsung Flex, nice. And
Akshay's on a
secondly,
flex mode today. He's flexing all the way
yeah.
through with the iPhone and now Samsung in Korea.
I mean, it's better to give a first-hand experience than just talk about
Harish, did you
it.
try out
Taiwan and
5G during
yeah,
your
Taiwan and Kalpe and suggesting
hey,
minimum
you were
viable
there too.
product. I see what
Harish,
you're doing here, man.
listen, you were there too, and so were you. You went earlier.
Yeah, no, Harish, did you get a chance to try out 5G in the US during your long sojourn over there?
I did. It didn't make any sense, because there was like a 1 meter spot in San Francisco where it worked, and you go outside that bubble and it doesn't. So, for 5G is at a place where it's not going to be usable for consumers for much of 2020, in anywhere in the world for that matter. It's probably Korea, because of how networks work there, they're optimizing it. But anywhere in the world, this will absolutely be a transitional year where carriers and mobile makers figure out how to tune their antennas, how to tune their networks to optimize 5G for consumer use. Having said that, I don't know how 5G will roll out in India, because if you guys have been reading the latest news, Vodafone is basically fucked, and Airtel isn't going to invest any money
Anytime
anywhere, because
soon.
it'll whatever money it makes, it needs to pay to the government for the next 300
I think it's
years.
just the same case with
So
Airtel as well.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
exactly the point, right? Like they made a payment of what, 10,000 crores last
Last
night,
night
and there's
before
another
I think they
20.
found that, but that's for Bharti Mittal, that dude. I think he found it in his sofa or something.
Yeah, they've got to pay another 23,000 crores or so. So he'd better keep searching his sofas for that.
Maybe that's why you
Yeah.
didn't notice. I only mentioned Jio, and I think they're gonna lead the 5G war in India, whatever, if you want to call it war, because I don't think Airtel or Vodafone
One-sided
may even
war.
exist
Yeah.
in a
Yeah.
few months.
Maybe the
So,
Airtel dude needs to go to Ambani's house to find that cash in his sofa.
so while we were on the topic of while we are on the topic of Samsung, and you guys have had some experience with 5G, and Harish, you are, well, you're the the chipset expert, so to speak, over here amongst us. So I was looking up the Exynos, it's the 990 and the S20, right, in India?
Yep.
And that does not ship with an integrated 5G modem. Do you think that was a calculated decision or just an engineering capability issue? Because it lets them ship their flagship SoC with 4G support.
No, it was absolutely a calculated move by Samsung, and it was one that actually makes sense for them because in a lot of markets they don't need 5G. 5G is just adding extra cost to them. So for them, I think Samsung is the only player who has this ability in 2020, because if you look at anybody else, OnePlus for that matter, will go all in on 5G. They won't be able to offer the same product everywhere because they can't go to Qualcomm and say, "Hey, give us an X, give us a 865 without 5G," because that's not possible. So Samsung right now is the only player who gets to do this, and it's a really smart move from the, for them. It will work out really well because they're gonna sell the 990 with 5G in a few markets, and they're going to sell the 990 without 5G in a few markets, and that strategy will work out for them because right now there's no reason to actually have 5G in anything, but because the 865 is 5G only, everybody else is following suit. So Samsung needs to maintain parity with what it sells in the US with a few other markets, say the UK, where 5G networks are actually live. So it'll sell the 990 with 5G in that market, but everywhere else, it can just sell it with the 4G and save itself some money.
I think Samsung knows extremely well what they're doing because they have a clear picture about India's 5G vision, and they know it's going to take time, which is why they didn't opt to include a 5G modem in the S20 series for the Indian market, even though you can pair up a 5G modem with it. But I think, as Harish said, they will only include the 5G option in countries where it's viable and where
Where
it's
it makes
supported.
sense, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
they save money, and we don't get expensive phones either.
All right, time to
Yeah.
put on my tinfoil hat again. Like, here's a thought. There's supposed to be a OnePlus 8 Lite. Do you think with the rising cost of the chipset, the 865 is supposed to be in the $100+ segment price range, and it's supposed to be a significant price jump over the 855. Do you think the OnePlus 8, the regular model, is likely going to go with something like a 765 instead of having parity, the spec parity with the OnePlus 8 Pro?
I would go and say that it may even have the 730 because I don't know what Qualcomm was thinking by switching to 5G this year. Well, it was purely a decision to maximize its profits
That's
because
right.
what it has essentially done is make sure that every premium device that we see will be costlier. It effectively made the 865 out of reach out of all of these value players that we've seen over the last 3, 4 years. So if you've seen the industry over the last 4 years, it has been that, yes, you could find the 835, 845, and 855 in a $1,000 phone and a $400, $500 phone. But now the 865 will only be limited to phones that are true flagships, as it were, like the S20 and something. Well, let's see if even Google bothers to use it later this
Yeah.
year. So you won't find it on any value phones at all. And even the 765, it has a 5G modem, but that should still be around the $500 to $600 range. So theoretically, most phones, I wouldn't be astonished if they used last year's 730 or even the 855. Because I was talking to the POCO guys about this as to why they didn't just use an 855 instead of the 730, and they said that with the 865 in the market, demand for 855 has gone up because brands who don't want to go in on 5G need a 4G solution, and the best 4G solution right now is the 855. So the 855, as a result of the arrival of the 865, is now costlier. So even that you won't see on many phones.
Yeah, so it's basically Qualcomm driving gentrification in the market. You know, like you cannot have affordable flagships anymore. Every phone is going to be more expensive.
But coming back to the point, speaking of A65, I mean, we have India's first A65 phone coming next week.
IQ.
It's Vivo.
Vivo's
affordable sub-brand, and they are bringing a phone with the 865 chipset. I mean, it would be interesting to see how much they would sell it for, but I think we'll get a clear idea whether 865 is...
How expensive or inexpensive would you think, would you want it to be a viable competitor? Like 50,000 plus, it's not selling.
No chance.
No, if they want to make any money off it, it'll be over 50 or 60, because anything under that, they'll lose money on every unit sold. But then again, there's a bigger problem with this phone. Even if they were to give it away for free, you would have to use FunTouch.
And that's no.
And you're better off, sending snail mail and doodling on the walls or something.
But I think
instead of using FunTouch,
I think it was a give us a good idea, because you know, being a BBK brand, and if they price it right, they don't buy chipsets like according to brands. They just buy truckloads and use it in across various brands, be it Realme, Oppo, OnePlus, IQ. What else am I missing?
Yeah, they'll just keep on adding a few more.
But if we can get a good idea if IQ is priced decently well or around the same margin as OnePlus, then I can see OnePlus 8 using A65 and still having that maybe a little more expensive price than OnePlus 70 or 70 Pro. But I mean, we'll have to wait and see how IQ prices it.
You know, I think like the OnePlus 8 Pro, when it launches, that'll most definitely have an 865. But realistically, I think it could very well be touching the 55,000 price point by now. They have been inching up with every successive generation. And
yeah.
I think what everybody has been calling the OnePlus 8 Lite is just going to be the regular OnePlus 8. And that's not going to have an 865.
No, it cannot. And I think with this generation, OnePlus will finally figure out a few problems that have been there in the in the past 2-3 years. We'll see wireless charging. We'll see a camera that is actually usable, probably, because it's now going to cost 55 to 60. And at that price, there's no excuses for not having all these features.
Cool. All right. So now we're heading over to the last segment for today, and that's foldable phones. Do you like them? Do you hate them? Do you not care about them? I, for one, love the new Galaxy Z Flip. I think it's a sexy looking phone that really gets over all the limitations of the Moto Razr. And it's a phone that I would really like to buy.
Yeah, 100%.
Parish.
Yep. Love the Galaxy Z Flip. Samsung India, give me several.
I mean, I used the Razr 2 weeks ago, and that's a sexy phone too. A little heavier than usual, but it is just sexy. There's nothing more about it. And I don't know how it will be priced. I mean, I've heard that the Z Flip might be around 85 to 90,000 in India, but I could be wrong. He could be wrong. But I was having a conversation. I think we were having a conversation with a few people that if this is the price of the Z Flip, the Moto Razr is basically dead on arrival.
Yeah. And also, Akshay, where to go with the foldable phone Flex, yeah?
Save those Flexes for next week, man. We need that. But yeah, I mean, it's a great-looking phone. It's last year's flagship in next year's form factor. That's how I would put it. Great-looking phone. It's got everything else going for it. And a not-too-bad price either. I mean, it's between this and a Galaxy S20 Ultra. That's a mouthful of a name. I would definitely pick the Flip over the Ultra. Like, it's unique. It's something new.
Yep, definitely. And that's the challenge Samsung has this year, right? It launched 4 phones this week, and theoretically, there's only 2 that are interesting: the S20 Plus and the Z Flip.
Yep.
I mean, the moment the phone was launched, I got at least two phone calls of friends of mine who were like, "We want to buy this. Should we buy this or should we buy the Razr?" I mean, clearly there is an audience who wants to spend that extra bit of money for the cool phone, and the Z Flip definitely looks cool because it's just a more thought-out foldable phone than the Galaxy Fold and the Moto Razr as well. And from what I've seen online, I may just buy it as well because it definitely looks sexy.
You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, and also, I
Yeah,
think
go ahead.
Samsung finally fixed the main flaw from last generation with the plastic display. And this is the first foldable we've seen with a glass display, and that, from what I've heard of the folks that use the phone, makes an absolute world of difference because it feels like you're using a phone, not like you're interacting with something that's plasticky. But glass display makes all that difference when you're interacting with that large screen. And I think Samsung is onto a winner with that.
And I think I did a story just 2 days ago that the Z Flip trumps the Razr in every way. The design, the specifications, the software. I mean, I don't see it lacking in front of when you compare it to the Razr in any way.
Yeah, true. I mean, like, you know, that's the thing. If you think from a broader perspective, it's our generation is getting into that point where, you know, everybody has a bit of spending power. They want to spend on something interesting. It's just that every other phone looks the same, does the same. There's something new in the market. The original Fold generated a lot of interest, but it was a prototype. Let's just put it like that. It was not production-ready hardware. This time they've nailed the execution. And I think we're seeing the results of that. There is a lot of interest. It's sold out across the US. And I think it should find a lot of success in India as well when it hits the market.
I mean, you can see Samsung's confidence in their own product because, I mean, if you remember during the S10's launch, the Galaxy Fold was behind a glass box. Nobody could touch it. This time, it was out in the wild. Anyone could just pick it up and play with the phone at the launch event. So it just shows that Samsung has that confidence now that they can make a great foldable phone, and I think the Z Flip might be it.
And also, Motorola is doing them a huge favor by screwing up basic features on the Razr, because for one thing, the camera on this is truly horrendous. I've seen photos that were taken by the AC crew. Oh my God, it's almost as bad as the camera on the original Razr that came out like a half decade and a half ago. So
Throwback.
I think they went a little too much on the nostalgia factor here. And number two, they screwed up the launch. This phone was ready 3 4 months ago. We were talking to Lenovo and we were like, "Where the hell is your phone?" And I don't know what they were waiting for. They could have had the only foldable working foldable in the market 3 4 months ahead of Samsung, and they missed out on that.
And the price.
Imagine if this thing, yeah, I mean, even if it cost the same, imagine if this thing came out 4 months ago.
Well, it might sell a little more.
Yeah.
All right, guys, so that's it for this week's as of yet unnamed tech podcast. Maybe we'll have a name, maybe we won't. Maybe you'll give us some suggestions for a name. We're up for it.
Ooh.
Not you,
Wait, I
Harish,
have
the
something to say
audience.
on that. Yeah,
Okay,
give us a
fine.
name and I'll give you any phone you want as long as that phone is a Realme C3.
Or an ancient OnePlus.
Yeah,
You
you've
have
Oh
quite a few of
no,
those.
no, never, not letting go of those.
Fine. All right, guys. So we're up for suggestions for names, or maybe we'll just stick to this. I don't know. We've got our Twitter handles. I am at Dhruv.
I am Balanator.
Can you spell that out?
Bala, my last name, and Nator, like Terminator.
All right, and Harish.
Dude, Akshay. Fine, I'm Chunky Nerd because I'm chunky and a nerd.
There you go. So that's me, Dhruv, Akshay, and Harish. And we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening in. We'd love some feedback, anything that you'd like us to talk about. And that's it for our first episode. Thanks for listening in.
Thank you.